universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, May 14th, 2018. Yeah, we had a couple of incidents over the weekend that underscore the importance of being able to defend yourself and being able to defend other people. We're going to show you a picture of actually some video, and I'll narrate it for the people who are listening on the radio. A gunman goes up to rob a bunch of parents with their kids, mostly moms, as they're getting out of a private school. And this is down in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And actually, one of the mothers was an off-duty police officer who had a gun in her purse and stopped the guy. Actually died eventually of his wounds. She pulled out her gun and shot him down. But what it is exactly what we're talking about in terms of having armed, vetted, trained teachers who volunteer to be able to protect themselves and protect other people. She was not in a uniform. He didn't know that she was a police officer. He didn't know that she had a gun. And she was able to protect herself, protect the children that were there, and do it effectively. And yet, over the weekend, we have Tim Cook going through the old, the Apple CEO, going through the typical liberal litany at his alma mater, Duke University, as he gave a speech, talking about the brave students at Parkland High School who are standing up against any effective means of protecting schools. Gun-free schools don't work. But we're going to take a look at what's going on in Iran as well, a terrorist attack in France. We're going to take a look at some reactions to Mother's Day. What is going on in North Korea? North Korea has said that they're going to have a ceremony to shut down their test site. Folks, it was shut down when the mountain collapsed on it last October. And it's kind of interesting. They got a checklist of the different things they're going to do. Two of those are already done by the mountain, by their previous nuclear test. We've also had a suicide attack by a family. I find it interesting that even though they did attacks on Christian churches yesterday, a lot of headlines only paid attention to the fact that they attacked, the final attack was against a police station. And we'll have video of that as they came in there with a car bomb. But we're going to take a look at what's going on in Jerusalem. We're going to take a look at what I think was some amazing bigotry from Mitt Romney. And I'll tell you why I think it's bigotry in terms of his attacks on a Christian pastor. I will tell you how Mitt Romney is now gone full arbiter as to what is, fake news, as well as it's the same thing that we're seeing in terms of news. He is now applying to religion. He's going to say, well, my religion says this, your religion says that, so you don't get a chance to say anything about your religion. Regardless of whether people are nonviolent or not, you can't discuss what you believe. You can't have a free exercise of religion. So we got Mitt Romney exercising freely his right to speak as a bigot. And he does. And we're going to take a look at the escalating confrontation between the United States and Europe over Iranian sanctions. And it is being escalated by none other than John Kerry and Obama officials, former Obama officials, who are taking to the press, writing op-ed pieces, telling Europe to withdraw their diplomatic corps from the United States, even to throw out American ambassadors, if America doesn't step down and support the Obama-Iran deal. This is what is so amazing about this. It was a horrible deal. And it was executed in an illegal, unconstitutional way. There's another one of these deals that was put together by Obama and one of his key officials, just like he and Kerry self-ratified the Paris Climate Accord. They self-ratified this Iran deal. And then Obama and his Homeland Security Secretary self-ratified the DACA deal, which was not really a deal. It wasn't a law. It was just saying, we're not going to enforce the law. And now we're going to take a look at what Lady DACA is doing. Yes, that's President Trump's current Homeland Security Director. So we've got a lot to take a look at. And we're going to see how China is playing this whole Iranian thing and the Middle Eastern thing a lot smarter than we are. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, May 14th, 2018, the day after Mother's Day. And I think it was kind of amazing. I don't know if they celebrate Mother's Day in Brazil, but we saw a mother defend her child and other mothers and children as they were coming out of a private school, and a robber came up and pulled a gun on him. He had just robbed somebody else down the street, and he was going to rob people. He had a gun pulled on him, and she pulled out a gun. I didn't know who that was. We got some video here of this. Here he comes, pulling out a gun. He's robbing people, and then you'll see this lady come up. There she is. That's the off-duty police officer. Pulled the gun out of her purse, got three shots off on him, and then came over. He had dropped the gun. She's kicking the gun away. Now she picks the gun up. She keeps him undercover, goes over and forces him to lay down, and keeps a foot on him until somebody shows up. Eventually, he died of his wounds, even though they called an ambulance there. Got him. He bled out at some point. But look, folks, this is exactly what we're talking about in terms of having trained people to protect the children in the schools. And so this mother illustrated exactly how that works outside a private school in Sao Paulo. As I was saying at the top of the hour, as that was happening over the weekend, we had Apple CEO Tim Cook speaking at his alma mater, Duke University, and he said things like this. He said, "Fearless, like the students of Parkland, Florida, who refuse to be silent about the epidemic of gun violence and have rallied millions to their cause. Their cause is to make sure that there isn't any effective protection in the schools. Turning the schools into gun-free zones only makes people victims of that robber that you just saw. Having people who are trained and vetted and able to carry weapons and the robbers don't know who that is, that's the way that you protect people. And you don't have to ask for the government's permission to do this either. We already have the permission. It's called the Second Amendment. You had, even though it was in the early 90s, that Joe Biden and George H.W. Bush pushed through the Gun-Free School Zone Act. You had people over a decade ago in Texas and other places at the local level say, we're going to have teachers who are vetted and trained and armed to protect our children in schools. And they did it. And there was nothing that the federal government could do about that. Nothing. They don't have a leg to stand on. Just as they can't do anything in terms of stopping medical marijuana that's been passed in 60% of the states. They don't have the authority. They never had the authority to ban marijuana in the first place. And as we look at this, we're going to take a look as we go through the news coming up here, a story showing that the DEA approved a massive number of people, thousands of people, who had criminal records and they had no information about them to be able to prescribe opioids. You want to know where the opioid epidemic comes from? Well, it comes from Big Pharma and their handmaid, the Drug Enforcement Agency. Yeah, they'd like to have that stuff. But one of the things that continue, every time I look at this opioid epidemic, I always think about the debates and the campaigns where you had New Jersey Governor Chris Christie going through this long story about how a friend of his, who was a lawyer who had been very successful in school, they went to school together, had a very successful career, had a great family, happy life, making lots of money and so forth. He got a back injury, and the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies got him addicted to opioids. It destroyed his career. It destroyed his family. And eventually, the guy committed suicide. And then Chris Christie immediately pivots from that to marijuana. And it's like, I'm sorry, that's not a sequitur there. That is a non sequitur to then demonize medical marijuana, which basically can prevent people from having to take opioids, and it can help people who are already addicted to opioids get off of it. I mean, it was the most incredible pivot I've ever seen, most incredible dishonest pivot I've ever seen in terms of Chris Christie pushing that. And so in the same way, you've got the Apple CEO, Tim Cook, pushing something that is only going to exacerbate the problem, saying we're going to follow these brave students of Parkland, Florida. No, you're not following them. They're putting them out there. They're funding them. They're using them as the advanced shock troops, and you don't dare criticize any of these kids out there who are pushing policies. If you do, you get the Dinesh D'Souza treatment. He got disinvited by the GOP in Florida because he tweeted out when the Parkland students initiative failed legislatively in Florida. They wanted to come up with some gun control legislation that they were pushing. And when it failed, Dinesh D'Souza tweeted out, adults one, kids zero. And for that, he was disinvited from the by the Florida GOP. That's the Florida GOP. GOP, as in Republicans in name only. Tim Cook went on to say, people who are fearless, like the women who say Me Too and Time's Up, women who cast light into dark places and move us into a just and equal future. Fearless like those who fight for the rights of immigrants, who understand that our only hope for the future is one that embraces all who want to contribute. So I hope you understand where Tim Cook where Tim Cook stands. He stands firmly with Hillary Clinton, or to the left of the Democrat Party, on the left side of it. And this is a company that made more profits in one quarter than Amazon has since its inception. I mean, Apple has a tremendous amount of money, tremendous amount of money. Also, as we look at other violence throughout the world where guns are or not a factor, we have in London yet another acid attack. Screaming man runs into a Quick Fit garage shouting, I've been attacked with acid, in an upmarket London suburb. And as Nigel Farage points out, we've seen a 44% increase year on year in London crime. He said, now London crime itself, what we've seen is 44% increase year on year in the murder rate going on in the capital. It's mostly knife crime. But you know what? It's not limited to that, is it? We've got drive-by shootings happening in gun-free London. Got a lot of gun murders in London as well. But what is London Mayor Sadiq Khan concerned about? He is concerned about a ticking time bomb, not of his Islamic migrants. No, he's looking at the ticking time bomb of child obesity. And so he's going on a campaign to stop junk food and fast food. That's the problem. It's not the people that he's bringing in. It's not the open borders policy that's bringing in a different group of people who are getting very violent. No, it's the problem is obesity, junk food, fast food. That's what he's concerned about. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's not any question that when we create gun-free zones, we actually increase crime. But they don't want to control, you know, they're out there trying to control knives or any sharp, pointy objects. Maybe they have never paid attention to what happens in prisons where people make their own knives. You'll never be able to stop that. The problem is the people. And again, it only underscores, all the knife crime only underscores the proven adage that guns don't kill people, people kill people. Knives don't kill people, people kill people. Cars and acid and car bombs don't kill people, people kill people. So why don't you exercise some control at the border of what people groups you're bringing in? Oh, no, that can't do that. Meanwhile, New York Democrats want to ban shooting sports because it spreads a gun culture. So that's just it. It ultimately comes down to the culture. And when we saw this article, my wife looked at it and she said, I didn't know they had any shooting sports in New York. She's from New York. Who knew that anybody there had a gun that they were able to use, let alone as shooting sports? But when they talk about shutting down gun culture in society, now explicitly talking about it, this is why you see everywhere, if you have some student who goes to a shooting range with their parents, and they say, look, I had a great time. My parents were going out as a family. I'm learning gun safety. I'm learning how to do real gun control, to use this responsibly. Then they get talked to. They get suspended from school because they're paying attention to the gun culture. Maybe we should be paying more attention to that as well. And you got the NRA suing the New York governor for a blacklisting campaign. Yeah, they're going in. They're trying to shut down gun manufacturers, gun retailers, using the banking industry. As I pointed out last week, we just had a lot of Catholic groups join with investor groups buying heavily into the stocks of gun manufacturers so they can try to shut them down. It's full on, folks. Every different angle they're coming. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Yeah, we just talked about the knife attack in Paris, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Actually, we talked about the attack against children and parents as they were coming out of a school and how that was stopped. But let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about this attack in Paris. Get into more detail about that, as well as the suicide attack that happened in Indonesia. President Trump has said we need to have some changes to our thought process on terror. So sad to see the terror attack in Paris. He said at some point, countries will have to open their eyes and see what is really going on. This kind of sickness and hatred is not compatible with a loving, peaceful, successful country. Changes to our thought process on terror must be made. So what happened in Paris? In Paris, rather. We've got a man who worked in a restaurant in the area. Described a harrowing scene, says RT, in which the perpetrator started stabbing a random woman. Yeah, just like we talked about in London. You know, the massive knife crime, or running people down with cars, or throwing acid. But it's also guns in gun-free London, where they banned guns. They're having drive-by shootings, just like Chicago. They said, I heard a woman screaming. She tried to seek shelter in our restaurant. That's when he attacked her right in front of our restaurant. From what I saw, she was stabbed in the leg. Two women aged 54 and 26 were injured in that attack. One person died. Four were seriously injured by the individual. He was, as RT puts it, neutralized by police. Let me tell you what they did to neutralize him. They shot him. Just like the case in Sao Paulo, you had police officers, which in those countries are the only people who are allowed to carry guns. And so you have to hope that one is around. And the attack will continue to go on until one gets to the place. And I think this attack went on for about 15 minutes, if I remember correctly. But they get neutralized by somebody with a gun, a good guy with a gun. Now, in the case of the students and the children and the parents, in that case where the robber pulled a gun on people or threatening them, she was right there at the spot and stopped it immediately. In this particular case, it went on for quite some time. Investigators are following the trail of this 20-year-old. He was a Frenchman, they said, but born in Chechnya. He rampaged through a festive Paris neighborhood, slashing passers-by with a knife for quite some time. He killed one person, wounded four. Police shot him to death. Now, they say he was a Frenchman who was born, but he was also on a police watch list for radicalism. But he had a clean record as far as criminal activities go. Kind of like what we see happening here in this country. People are allowed to come through our open border, and some of them are trying to escape MS-13 in El Salvador, for example, going to Long Island in New York. And others are MS-13. Because if you've got a wide open border and you don't have any control over it, as we still don't a year and a half into the Trump administration, because we've got Lady DACA running the Department of Homeland Security, if you have open borders, then MS-13 can follow peaceful illegal immigrants through as well. And then they can murder their child very brutally, as has happened in Long Island. And so you have this situation where you've got a guy who is known to be a radical. Came in when he was 10 or 11 years old. His parents brought him in, but he was radical, and they knew it. They just won't do anything about it, waiting until he commits a crime. And the same thing is happening on Long Island. They know these people are MS-13, these kids who are in school that were paying for their schooling. They come here, and we pay for their school. And they get the MS-13 tattoos, and they start victimizing other Hispanic students for the most part. I mean, that's really the people who are taking the brunt of all this. I don't know how this is considered to be a policy that is benevolent to Hispanics when you allow MS-13 to come in because you have no control of the border. And that's what was happening here. So this guy's got a clean criminal record, so they let him in. And, of course, it's reported by all these different press organizations, the AP, Associated Press, that it was Allahu Akbar that he was shouting, which says God is great. No, it isn't. God is greater. Daily Mail got it wrong as well. They said it is Arabic for God is the greatest. No, it isn't. It is God is greater. God is greater than your God. God is greater than you. Allah is what they're saying. That their God is greater than your God. their God is greater than your culture, and so forth. That is why they are shouting that, and they still can't get to the root of what the issue is here. So he's 20 years old. He filmed a propaganda video where he recorded his final message as a suicide attacker. He was willing to go down. Fortunately, he didn't know how to do a bomb. He just had a knife, but he was able to kill somebody and wound quite a few others as he was doing this. And they point out that as he came in from Chechnya, is an area where there's a lot of radicals there. They say that they came as political refugees because the Russians were attacking them because they regarded them as Islamic terrorists. So they come to France. And there's some 30,000 Chechens now in France, most of whom arrived as political refugees. So what does the French government do? They have an S file of suspects that they think have radicalized views that could pose security risk, but they're not going to do anything about it until they kill somebody because of political correctness. Now, we have one mayor who is speaking out on this, and of course, it's a French mayor. He's part of the Eurosceptic National Front Party, an ally of Marine Le Pen's anti-immigration party, and he has been the point of a lot of government punishment and criticism. But what he had to say was absolutely true. He said, Islam is the problem. He said, when we look at these neighborhoods, we see that there's never been such a ghetto and an apartheid there as there is now. And I've said many times that what happens is by the nature of Islam, which understand is both religious and political and cultural, when the people come into an area like France, they self-ghettoize. They don't have to be cordoned off like the Germans did to the Jews and said, oh, okay, all you Jews, you stay in this one little neighborhood, you can't get out of there. They do it to themselves because they don't want to mix with the surrounding culture. And so they create an apartheid by themselves. They create a ghetto unto themselves. And all it does is exacerbate their conditions. They live, therefore, in poverty and so forth. And he said, you can go in and you can build buildings and you can do all the typical socialist liberal things to try to help poor people, but you understand that their problem is Islam. One person says, well, we finished the real estate. Now we have to take care of their jobs, their public services, and the rest of it. And the mayor, whose name is Menard, said, that's not the problem. The problem in those neighborhoods is Islam. And we've had a manifesto that was published 3 weeks ago in France. It was published in the French daily La Parisienne on April the 21st, signed by 300 prominent intellectuals and politicians, including former President Nicolas Sarkozy and another former prime minister. And they made some demands of Islam. They said, you need to, the Quran, as written, incites violence. And so we need to rewrite the Quran. Good luck with that. The bottom line is that when people say, well, that's an aberrant form of Islam, at least some of the people in France understand, no, that is true Islam. That's why they call them Islamic fundamentalists. They actually believe what the book says. That's why they throw elderly Jewish women out of the windows and stab them. Welcome back. We've seen a heinous knife attack by an ISIS follower shouting Allahu Akbar. My God is greater than your God, greater than your culture, as he had pre-recorded a suicide video. We have seen a robber threaten children coming out of a school, and one of the people that was with the children, one of the parents with the children, was an off-duty police officer. She pulled out a gun and stopped him before he harmed anybody. And, of course, the individual who was on the knife rampage in Paris was eventually stopped by a man with a gun, a police officer, because people in Paris have to wait until a police officer gets there, sometimes 15 minutes or so, while they go on their spree with the knife because they're not allowed to carry weapons legally. And then we have the suicide blast that is a family of five carrying out a bomb attack on an Indonesian police station. And prior to this, there were suicide bombings that hit several churches, also in the largest city of Indonesia, a place that is 90% Muslim. Well, I don't know if it's 90%. There's only 10% Christian. They may have some other religions there, but only 10% of the people are Christian. But they set up multiple suicide attacks against churches. But let's take a look at the suicide attack at the police station, because this was a family of five, including an eight-year-old child. And so they have a checkpoint there, and you can see this motorcycle pull up. Oh, there it is, blew up there. A couple of motorcycles pull up, and they detonated the suicide bomb right there at the checkpoint. And we've seen that happen as well at churches in Egypt, for example, where they have the TSA type of screening, get everybody grouped together and bunched together in a line that's not going anywhere so they can take a look at you one by one. And then the suicide bomber just pulls up there to the conveniently grouped bunch of people and blows up a bomb and gets far more people than they would if there wasn't a security checkpoint. And quite frankly, folks, security experts will tell you that what we're doing at the TSA checkpoints is not only not effective by their own measurements, they find such high failure rate when they test the TSA screeners that they won't even publish it. Can't talk about that. Top secret. We all know that it's not working. And we all know that what they're doing is creating even a greater security threat there. But when you look at this, this family of five, an eight-year-old, they drive up to the gates. They all four adult perps are dead, but the young eight-year-old child, they said, is now recovering in hospital. Four policemen, however, and six civilians were also injured, caught up in the blast. Initial reports said that at least seven had been killed in the attack there at the police station. And then what had happened a day earlier, they had at least 13 people killed and three seemingly coordinated suicide bombings that hit churches in Indonesia. And they said about 40 victims who were injured in the attacks are being transported to hospitals. So killed 13, 40 injured. The three blasts hit on Sunday morning within 10 minutes of each other. Yeah, they were coordinated. Hit a Catholic church, Santa Maria Catholic Church. Also hit the Protestant Indonesian Christian Church and a Pentecostal church. I said Christians only constitute 10%, but that can't be allowed. They have to purge that 10%. See, that is the ultimate intolerance. We keep getting lectured about tolerance by Christians. We got Mitt Romney lecturing us about tolerance as Christians. Said you can't talk about your religion. If you think in your religion, if you believe that your relationship with God is different than Jewish people's relationship or Islamic people or Mormons or whatever, you're not allowed to say that, according to Mitt Romney. But he is allowed to say that you're wrong, see, and he can shut you down. It's the same type of thing we're seeing on social media. Oh, no, no, no. We've got the Southern Poverty Law Center and other people who are going to vet you. Snopes is going to vet you. And if they determine, as the final arbiters of truth, that you are wrong, then you're going to be censored. And that's essentially what Mitt Romney is calling to have happen to a pastor who's going to be leading a prayer at the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem today. He's absolutely outraged. This guy is not calling for death to anybody. He's not calling for violence to anybody. He just says, I think that the only way that you can have a relationship with God is by this. And Mitt Romney says, that cannot be said. That cannot be tolerated. Mitt Romney has no respect whatsoever for the First Amendment, folks, because the First Amendment's not just about political speech. It's also about the free exercise of religion. That means that if you believe something because of your religion, as long as it's not calling for the destruction of other people, then that's fine. However, in this society, the Democrat Party, and I'm sure that Mitt Romney is fine with this as well, if you have a religion that calls for the violent destruction of all other religions because your God is greater than all those other religions and those infidels must be stamped out, you can't say anything about that religion. No, no, that's protected speech. But those Christians who set up a tolerant society here, who said, you know what, we're tired of the conjunction of government and religion as we saw all over Europe with Christian religions. And now we're seeing that with Islamic religions. When we take a look at what's going on in Iran and with the elections that just happened in Iraq, you understand that it's not just Islam. No, Islam is divided into all these different different groups. You have the Sunnis, you have the Shias, you have the Wahhabists, and they are politically aligned with the individual religions. So these different sects of Islam are aligned with different Islamic political groups. And that used to be the case with Christianity in the Middle Ages. It was really more about a political alignment than it was what anybody believed. They weren't even allowed to read a Bible, for example. And so that was why you had, ostensibly, you had people who were Catholics killing Protestants and vice versa. It was really because of political allegiance as much or more so than anything else. And that's the case that's going on in Islam right now. And so we created a country here. We said people are going to be able to freely exercise their religion. When the settlers came to this country, different states had different official religions, and that continued for quite some time. It continued even after the First Amendment, because the First Amendment was to stop the federal government from instituting one religion that would then shut down the religious independence of these different areas. You know, Rhode Island was Baptist, and Maryland was Catholic, and so forth. Pennsylvania was Quaker. They didn't want to have somebody come in in Washington and impose one of these Christian groups' beliefs on everybody else. But you got Mitt Romney doing that. Mitt Romney is saying, how dare you say that salvation is by this, that your relationship with God is by this? You're not allowed to say that. If you are, you need to be censored and shut up and put in a closet. That's Mitt Romney's approach to this. All right, let's take a look at what really is at the core of protecting our society as it breaks down. I mean, what is going to keep our culture going? Is it going to be passed on? The culture that created this religious tolerance, the culture that created America, is that going to be passed on by our schools? No, it isn't. They are teaching a very different culture. It's not just an anti-gun culture. It's antithetical to all the principles that this country was established on. And when we look at this, it really does make a difference. When we look at this guy that did the knife attack in Paris, he came here as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, grew up in an area that was an isolated ghetto of Islam because they chose to live isolated and away from other people. And they had a particular culture that was very different from the French culture, that even though it's not really, I wouldn't call it Christian anymore, it still had those basic Christian values in terms of social values. Are we going to be able to maintain that? I think that comes right to the core of what Mother's Day. You know, we look at Mother's Day yesterday. We've got NARAL coming out with an anti-mother Mother's Day message, celebrating abortion. But are we going to abort the family? That's the real question. You know, we used to understand that the hand that rocked the cradle rules the world. We used to place importance on raising our children and instilling in them values and culture that we had. No longer in the West. That's why the West's culture is disappearing. We don't care enough about it to pass it on to our kids. Instead, we pass our kids on to the government to have them install whatever culture they want. Welcome back. I want to take a look at some Mother's Day issues, some family issues, some issues that are going to affect whether or not this culture, this nation, or even Western civilization survive. Are we going to continue the culture that we have here, the nations that we have here? Not if we don't continue the family. A strong nation is made up of strong families. And I think we have lost our way, as evidenced by NARAL's Mother's Day message. These are the pro-choice, the National Abortion Rights Action League. That's NARAL. We'll tell you what that is in just one moment. Real quickly, before we do, I want to remind you of some of the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. We have three sales right now that are 50% off. One of those is DNA Force Plus. That is a very premium product. Again, BioPQQ is a very expensive key ingredient of DNA Force Plus. We have more than 170 clinical studies showing how effective that is. You can take a look, do your own research. But it is a big dollar savings to be able to get 50% off of DNA Force Plus, a very effective product. Also, we have our Super Blue Fluoride line of dental products. a couple of different flavors of toothpaste, a mouthwash, as well as the Immune Gargle. And we call it Immune Gargle because these products don't have fluoride in them. They have the good halogen, iodine, and they have nano silver that's very effective at killing bacteria as well as viruses. So we have the toothpaste, the mouthwash, the Immune Gargle, all of those 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And finally, BodEase, 50% off. It's a very intense turmeric formula. It can help support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. So take a look at those products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com at 50% off. We really do appreciate and need your support. All right, Mother's Day, and the National Abortion Rights Action League retweeted a individual who said, choosing an abortion is an act of love. Hashtag Mother's Day. Yeah, anti-Mother's Day. And then NARAL themselves came out and said, black women are 243% more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women. I wonder if that includes the abortions that they provide. We can and must do better. Yeah, maybe they can make it 500% with the abortions. Because as they point out in this article from Breitbart, currently in America, there are 501 abortions of black babies for every 1,000 live births, as opposed to just 138 among white people. Blacks are aborted at 3.6 times the rate of whites. And according to the CDC, between 2007 and 2010, nearly 35% of the deaths by abortion in the U.S. happened to black babies. Even though they're only 12% of the population, 35% of the deaths. And in 2017, Planned Parenthood said that 94% of pregnant women seeking its help end up getting an abortion. Well, who would think? Who would think? I mean, that only happens to be one of their most profitable things that they do, and the reason that they were created. Margaret Sanger was quite upfront about the eugenics background of this. They said, whereas only 0.6% get adoption referrals and 5.1% get prenatal care of any kind. So not only 5% are going to get prenatal care, less than a half of a percent are going to get, or about a half a percent are going to get referrals to adoption, but the rest of them get abortions. And then what happens today if your child is born? Does your child belong to you anymore, mothers? Or does it belong to the government? The government thinks your child belongs to them from birth. Not only does a child belong to them from birth, but their DNA belongs to them from birth. As WND points out, a plan developing now would give the federal government ownership of infants' DNA obtained from blood samples taken at birth to screen for threatening diseases. Now, we've suspected and had reports that this is being done anyway. But they're just going to do the stuff that they've been doing secretly and in quiet. They're now going to do this overtly, what they have been doing covertly. But the organization Citizens Council for Health Freedom said, as things stand, in just over 2 months, parents will lose their consent rights for the use of their newborn baby's DNA for federally funded research. That's what they say it's for. Once the revised common rule goes into effect, July 19th, 2018, a child's DNA held by the government could be sequenced, meaning a baby's genetic code could be completely detailed and mapped and then recorded in a state government database, used, shared, whatever. This is private information on America's tiniest citizens who will grow into adults stripped of their genetic privacy when they were not able to protect themselves or to give consent. Now, where is this coming from? There was a law that came out to protect this. And then in 2014, they had the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act, which would require parental consent for the use of newborn DNA. Now, Obama signed that bill, but then under his administration, they quietly later deleted it. You know, kind of like they had the insider trading that was going on in Congress, and they made a big display of stopping the insider trading. And then when nobody was paying any attention, they eviscerated that bill later. Well, that's essentially what they did here. They had a privacy bill that would not allow the government to collect DNA from the children unless the parents consented to it. And then they quietly removed those protections. And then they set up a rule to take effect January the 19th, 2017, the day before President Trump took office. And the Trump administration put a hold on that strategy. But the hold will expire July 19th unless it is renewed again. So we have a situation where the government says they're going to own your DNA, your kid's DNA, unless they are expressly denied that. And they're going to take away the denial of that privacy if we don't continue to renew this. I mean, if President Trump does renew this, it's just a temporary measure. Because what will happen is as soon as somebody else comes in, Republican or Democrat, they'll take that away. We have to have some serious reconsideration of the various ways that technology is impinging on our privacy and destroying it in so many different ways. But we can't even get the Bill of Rights that we have now enforced. There seems to be no constituency for that in Washington whatsoever. And most of the American people don't really care about that either. We're talking about some updates to the Gina Haspel confirmation, talking about how few people really care about the Bill of Rights anymore. I just want to give carte blanche to the government. If the government says that what they're doing will keep us safe, we don't even think about whether or not it will keep us safe. We just say, okay, take my liberty, take my privacy, anything that you want. And as they point out, the DNA of newborn citizens should not be used for research without parental consent, nor later without their own consent as adults, because they were minors when the government got it without their consent. Now, as we talk about Mother's Day and whether or not you really are the mother or whether or not the government sees themselves as the parents, and of course they do. It's one of the reasons why they keep pushing the government schools to an earlier and earlier age. Sarah Sanders, as people were asking her, for Mother's Day, they said, does having small children help you deal with CNN's Jim Acosta? And she said, both of them whine pretty regularly. They both like to ask the same questions, and sometimes their tone needs to be adjusted a little bit. So I think that having kids has prepared me for the job that I have right now in terms of dealing with the big child, the big baby, Jim Acosta, who whines just, are we there yet? What's more difficult, she said, dealing with your children on an onerous day or dealing with CNN reporter Jim Acosta? She said, in all seriousness, I think that having kids is great preparation for anything, especially a job where you need patience. And they have certainly prepared me for this one. Let me tell you what prepared my family to take control of our children. There's a story coming out of Forest City, Arkansas. And this is a bit more egregious in terms of the violence involved here. But essentially the same thing happened when my wife was teaching school. She taught school. She's got a master's degree in education. And she saw something very similar to this. A shocking video showing a teacher ordering six of her students aged four to pelt another student with rocks to teach him a lesson. Now, the situation that my wife was teaching in elementary school, it was an open classroom situation, and this other teacher was constantly psychologically battering and humiliating this one child, telling him to stand in a trash can because he was nothing but a piece of trash, and the administration would do nothing about it because of teachers' unions and because of the tenure issues. And my wife said, we're not going to have anything to do with this. Our kids are not going to have anything to do with this. At some point, folks, we have to stand up and we have to protect our kids. And we have to pass the values along to them so that we don't have a society that is taken over by families of suicide bombers, like we just saw in Indonesia. Some cultures are better than others. And if we don't stand up for our culture, if we don't pass that along to our children, we are destroying their legacy. That is the most important job you have. Sometimes the urgent takes precedent over the important.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Now, I was talking in the last segment about the First Amendment. Freedom of religious speech as well as political speech. And we'll get to what Mitt Romney said in the religious area. But just take a look at what is happening with Google and Facebook. They are restricting ads in Ireland ahead of an abortion vote. If you don't agree with the abortionists there, you're not going to be able to place ads there. And don't tell me that they're not shadow banning anybody who is pro-life in that upcoming referendum that's going to be there. That's what the real danger of this is, when you start having speech controlled by the crony surrogates of the government. Folks, that is exactly what's going on here. I've seen this happen, as I've said before. Third parties, people who are independents, they have to go through a long petition process to get on the ballot in the first place that the Republicans and Democrats don't have to do. And then once they do that, they would set up these organizations that were private, because they realized that when the government was running the debates, if it was being run by PBS or NPR or whatever, they could not exclude candidates, because then that would be in violation of the First Amendment. So what they did was they set up a private organization that was populated by the press. The press that is supposed to be for free speech and open debate. And the press then would decide that only the Republicans and Democrats would be allowed to join the debate, not the third parties, not the independent candidates. And that's precisely what they are doing with Google and Facebook, that they helped to set up, that they helped to create. They're using them as surrogates. And then when people complain about the censorship, they said, well, they're private organizations, they can do whatever they want. We've seen that happen at the state level when they did it with the press organizations that would run the debates. That is a same strategy that they're using right now. And now we got the left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center policing even what music you can listen to on Spotify. They're going to define certain music as hate content. The British police are threatening to prosecute Facebook users for malicious communication if you make fun of them. Don't make fun of them. That's hate speech. One of the issues that they had, that they had a haul that involved a comically small quantity of cannabis, and people were laughing about it. Said, I hope you managed to nail Pablo Escobar this afternoon, because it was such a tiny amount that they busted somebody for. Wow, that put a dent in the war on drugs, LOL. And they said, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to ban a number of people here. And I'd like to remind everybody, this is a police page, and whatever your thoughts on one of my officers seizing drugs, being insulted, abusive, or offensive can and will result in prosecution under the Malicious Communications Act of 1988. So there you go. Don't make fun of the police. Don't make fun of their futile, absurd, and certainly in the United States, it may be legal in Britain, but the war on drugs is not legal because we do have the 10th Amendment still on the books. They didn't delete that. They just ignore it. Just ignore it. You have a black activist jailed for his Facebook post speaking out about secret FBI surveillance. And then to all of this, we add Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney, who is now running and trying to virtue signal, I guess, to Mormons in Utah about how he is one of them, since he's lived all of his life outside of Utah. Now, kind of like Hillary Clinton, who became a carpetbagger, in a sense, going to New York to get elected as senator. Now, Mitt Romney wants to be elected in Utah. So he's upset about the fact that a Christian pastor out of Dallas, Robert Jeffress, is going to be leading a prayer, the opening ceremony of the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. He said, Robert Jeffress has said, you can't be saved by being a Jew. He says, Mormonism is a heresy from the pit of hell. Such religious bigotry should not be such a religious bigot should not be giving the prayer that opens the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, said Mitt Romney. Well, guess what? Mitt Romney is far more dangerous than this pastor, whether you believe he's bigoted or not. Mitt Romney has his own beliefs. And this pastor is not suggesting that anybody get violence with anyone. But Mitt Romney is suggesting that this person's religious beliefs need to be censored, that he should not have the free exercise of his religious beliefs. Shut up. Money. We don't believe that.
Found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I want to take a look at Iran. I want to take a look at what is happening, especially what is happening with former Obama administration officials trying to create a wedge between the U.S. and Europe. It's amazing to me not only what John Kerry is doing, but what former Obama officials are doing. And as we look at the bigger picture in Iran, we've got an election that took place over the weekend. They're still counting the final votes, but they're expecting that the cleric, Muqtada al-Sadr, and his Moving Forward bloc has a substantial lead. And who are these people? Well, he is a Shia, and of course that means that he is allied with Iran politically, because you understand that these different sects, Shia, Sunni, Wahhabi, they are all have their political alliances as well. And so Iran is Shia. Iran has pushed Hezbollah in Lebanon, and Hezbollah had major electoral victories just a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, that they had their election in Lebanon. And that is now controlled by an Iranian political ally, an Iranian religious ally, the Shia factor there, the Hezbollah. And the same thing has now happened in Iraq, And so when you want to look at ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and elsewhere, it's starting to look like a Shia state. And one of these, they said both Sadr's bloc, which is the Moving Forward bloc, and a bloc that is loyal to Hadi al-Amiri. He is head of the Badr Brigade. Now, this is the military wing of an Iranian-based Shia Islamic Party. So in Iran, they have the Shia Islamic Party, and these people are the military wing of that, and they are in Iraq. And of course, they are going to be ruling Iraq along with this other Shia cleric. That's the situation that is developing in Iraq. Iran, meanwhile, is threatening to expose the U.S. diplomats who took bribes in order to create the nuclear deal. Maybe that's why John Kerry is so furiously moving back and forth to try to keep this thing going. He's trying to keep Iran happy, because if that doesn't happen, as I said, we will reveal which Western politicians and how much money they received during the nuclear negotiations. That was Zarif's senior advisor. He said, if Europeans stop trading with Iran and don't put pressure on U.S., then we will reveal which Western politicians and how much money they had received during nuclear negotiations to make the Iran deal happen. And as I pointed out last week, the Iran deal and the billions of dollars that were turned over, it was a bad deal. As I said, it was an illegal deal. It was an unconstitutional deal. It was a deal that was put together by Obama and Kerry. They couldn't get it passed as a treaty, and it should have been a treaty. It should have been done as a treaty. It was economic as well as military. And so it should have been approved by the Senate. But they decided they wouldn't do that, just like they decided with the Paris Climate Accord and with DACA, they wouldn't go through the legal procedures. They would just do it themselves by executive order. And so when they did that, it was a bad deal. It was an illegal deal. It gave a great deal of money. That money then passed to a lot of European countries that had big contracts, maybe to the pockets of a lot of European politicians, maybe some U.S. politicians. You know, as H.L. Mencken said, an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. Well, maybe so was this Iranian deal, an advanced auction of stolen goods. It wasn't necessarily Iran's money, as a matter of fact. President Clinton and others had passed some legislation that said, this needs to be adjudicated first to determine whether or not victims of terrorism have a prior claim on this money. And there were prohibitions of turning this money back to the Iranians. That's why you had Obama send them plane loads of cash in foreign currencies, because he was violating U.S. law. Yeah, he said, well, we didn't give it to them. We didn't take it out of the Treasury directly and send them Federal Reserve currency notes. We did it with Swiss francs and other currencies and so forth. So we didn't violate the law. See, that's the kind of prevarication that is so typical of the Obama administration. We're going to self-ratify this treaty with the Paris Accord, and we're going to self-ratify this treaty with the Iranians. And then we're going to say that we didn't violate the law because we're going to send them the cash and foreign currencies loaded on a plane. At the same time, we get prisoners there. Oh, and we're not paying ransom for those prisoners either. See, that's the lies that we got from these people. And so when we look at this, and as it passes along, we've now got, over the weekend, a couple of former Obama administration officials writing op-ed pieces, and they're suggesting that the European allies should expel American diplomats. It's absolutely amazing to me. This is going so far beyond the attempted overthrow of the election to continual and direct opposition to this administration's policies. It used to be that when somebody left as president, it's always been the tradition, whether it was Democrat or Republican, they would quietly go to their ranch or whatever, and they would hang out, and they would not have any comments. These people are not only commenting, but they are actively opposing the current administration's policies. Whether you agree with the policies or not, I find this to be a very troubling development here. So you got two former Obama administration officials, reports Zero Hedge, suggesting that America's European allies should punish Trump for withdrawing from the Iran deal and for levying additional sanctions on Iran. They said European countries are obliged to take aggressive steps to preserve the Iran deal in order to avoid becoming Trump's doormat. And the people writing this are putting this in the New York Times. They did it last Thursday. Stephen Simon and Jonathan Stevenson. They were directors on Obama's National Security Council. And, you know, we had that that piece come out and says, you know, President Trump looks like had hired a private security firm to investigate some former Obama officials. Why would he do that? I mean, you look at this situation, you got a couple of guys on the National Security Council of Obama telling the European Union this. They say the European Union could, for instance, announce the withdrawal of member states' ambassadors from the U.S. They're encouraging the EU to withdraw ambassadors from the U.S., these Obama officials. And they said, isn't this what states do when diplomatic partners breach solemn agreements? Do you think that the Iranian deal was a solemn agreement? It was only between Obama and Kerry and the Iranian state. He had a law was passed. He didn't want to get 2/3 of the approval of the Senate. So the Congress passed a law saying you can't do that deal. And then Obama vetoed that. And they nearly overrode that. They had 34 votes. If it had been one less vote, they would have overridden Obama's veto and his Iranian deal. And Congress made it very clear that when the presidency changed, unless it was Hillary Clinton, that deal was done. So this was not a solemn agreement. But these two guys who worked for the Obama administration said, isn't this what states do when diplomatic partners breach solemn agreements, expose them to security risks, threaten to wreak havoc on their economies? And then they go further. Instead of just saying, maybe you should bring home some of your diplomats and protest, they say, depending on the American response, European capitals might even follow up with an expulsion of American ambassadors. So these Obama officials from his National Security Council are begging Europe in the New York Times. They're begging them to send home to bring back some of their diplomats and to expel American ambassadors. They said it'd be hard to fault these moves as irresponsible. In other words, you should do this. And we won't call you, we'll cheer you if you do this, say the Obama officials. They said the White House would face the first hard choice in this whole process, a full-blown crisis in transatlantic relations. That's exactly what the Obama administration would do. Stay with us when we come back. We're going to take a look at what China is doing. Welcome back. So we have the situation where we've got former Obama administration officials who were on the National Security Council begging Europe to break diplomatic relations with the United States over the Iran deal that they put together over the objections of nearly 2/3 of the Congress and over 2/3 of the American people at the time that it happened, saying this is a sacred compact that has been destroyed. Let me tell you what they're really concerned about, as Iran is saying, you know, if this thing doesn't stay together, we're going to name the corrupt politicians that we paid off to get this deal. It was billions of dollars that came out of the United States that went to these people. And as it flowed to Iran, Iran bought a lot of goods and services from European Union companies. They also bought a lot of European Union politicians. Maybe a lot of those politicians that they bought were in the Obama administration, especially considering how hard they're working on trying to keep this deal going through, to keep the Iranians happy so the Iranians don't out these crooks who sold us out. And as unhappy as I am over this deal, that ship has sailed. They got the money, unfortunately. And now the question is, what happens at this point? But first, let's take a look. We looked at the two individuals who were writing in the New York Times an op-ed piece saying, please pull back your diplomats, and if that doesn't work, expel American ambassadors from your country. And then on Saturday, we got John Kerry again, spotted dining with several Iranian regime officials in Paris. Former senior advisor to Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, Jason Osborne, tweeted, so John Kerry just left a meeting in Paris at La Avenue with three Iranians. A friend was sitting next to their table and heard John Kerry blasting Donald Trump. The Iranians had a five-person security detail, and they left in diplomatic vehicles. Is John Kerry FARA registered? In other words, is he registered as a foreign lobby agent? We've now got President Trump talking about the Logan Act. And quite frankly, folks, this is exactly what the Logan Act was set up. I understand it goes all the way back to 1798. I understand nobody has ever been charged with this. But this is directly the Logan Act. As Fox News is pointing out, collusion is a dirty word. So where is the outrage over Kerry's secret meetings that continue even after we're out of the deal? He's still continuing with these secret meetings, trying to get the Iranian deal to continue in some way, shape, or form. Where is the outrage over his secret meetings on the Iran deal? They say an Iranian foreign ministry spokesperson confirmed the meetings after the Boston Globe broke the news. And these are the older meetings that happened before President Trump came out of the Iran deal. And he's still doing this, even though people have been talking about this. The Boston Globe talked about it, talked about how he's acting as a foreign agent. They said, we don't see the U.S. just as Mr. Trump. The United States is not just the current ruling administration, said the Iranian foreign ministry. You understand that? They're looking at this and saying, well, you know, he may be officially the president, but he's not really the full government. We've got another government in Washington. You can call it the deep state. You can call it permanent bureaucracy. You can call it the military, whatever you want. These people see themselves as an ongoing government. And that's why they've worked so hard to create a coup against President Trump to overthrow this election. And as Fox News pointed out, when he says, when the Iranian foreign minister says, we don't see the U.S. is just Mr. Trump, and it's not the ruling administration right now. They said, think about this. Think about what this means. Kerry was working with a sworn enemy of the United States to try to undermine the foreign policy of the elected president of the United States. That is a Logan Act violation. And they quote the Logan Act. They said on Twitter, Trump suggested Kerry might have violated the Logan Act. And here's what it says, some of it. I read this whole thing to you last week. I think it was about a week to 10 days ago that I started talking about this. Any citizen of the United States who, without authority of the United States, directly or indirectly commences or carries on any correspondence or intercourse of the foreign government with the intent to influence the measures or so-and-so and to defeat the measures of the current government. That is the Logan Act. That is what John Kerry is doing. He is violating the Logan Act. He is part of another government that is setting up their own policy. Whether or not you agree with the policy that we have here, just like you have the FBI, the NSA, the CIA deciding that they don't like the outcome of the election and they're going to overthrow it one way or the other. You have the National Security Council of Obama, his Secretary of State, actively opposing Trump and saying that they're going to continue the policy that they set up. But I'm telling you, what is even more concerning to me is the fact that we now have, with DACA, again, President Trump understood that he could get out of the Paris Climate Accord, that he could get out of the Iranian deal, that they were just signed by Obama, that they were never ratified. The same thing is true of DACA. Why is the Trump administration, why is Jeff Sessions playing this game with federal judges at the lowest level who are telling President Trump, no, you can't get rid of DACA. which is just a memo that was signed by the former Homeland Secretary. You can't vet people coming into this country. You can't protect the borders. These are federal judges saying this. There is no law that was ever changed any more than Obama ever had a treaty with Iran. He never had a treaty with Iran. He never had a treaty with the Paris Climate Agreement. Those are never treaties. DACA is not a law. There's nothing there that needs to be decided in the courts. Nothing whatsoever. Well, we got John Kerry conducting this stuff. And then you have the issue of what the real goal of U.S. policy is. And this is where it gets a bit dodgy. When we look at the fact that John Bolton and others have made it very clear, we've even had a leaked document coming out of the White House that says that they're going for regime change in Iran. And we had John Bolton on Jake Tapper. And let's play video clip number 5, where John Bolton and Jake Clapper go back and forth as to what might happen to people in Europe if they don't go along with us and they continue on this Iranian deal.
With all due respect, I didn't get an answer to the question. Is the U.S. going to impose sanctions on European companies that continue to do business with Iran?
I think I did give the answer.
Well, you said we'll see.
The answer is it's possible. It depends on the conduct of other governments.
Okay.
So what he's saying is that we're going to put these sanctions in there. And if European countries continue to trade with Iran after the sanctions, then we're going to take action against them. And I think this is a very dangerous policy. You know, we've had the Europeans, and I understand what their reasons are. They've got a lot of contracts with this. As I said before, they got a lot of money that they made out of those billions of dollars that we turned over. The politicians made a lot of money. They don't want to be exposed. They want to keep this deal going. The policy that Bolton is doing is regime change. And he, on his side, is willing to have essentially an economic war with Europe in order to have regime change in Iran. Does that sound reasonable to you? It doesn't sound reasonable to me. As a matter of fact, they pushed back on this last week and they said, we don't want to see the United States as the economic policeman of the world. They would love to see us as the unpaid mercenary military policeman of the world, but they don't want to see us as the economic policeman of the world. In other words, they don't want us taking action against their companies that continue to trade with Iran. And we look at where this might go. Take a look at this situation when we come back about this company, ZTE, that President Trump says, we're going to get them back in business. We got to protect these Chinese jobs of this Chinese company. Why are they losing their jobs? I'll tell you the answer on the other side, and it is exactly what we're going to be facing if we go down this road that neocons like John Bolton have laid out for us to confront Europe. We'll be right back.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
All right, so where this Iran sanction stuff is going, I think it's very interesting when we bring China into it. And China comes into it as we look at these announcements about ZTE. Trump pledges to safeguard Chinese telecom jobs. If you've seen these headlines, you might say, what in the world is going on here? Well, here's what's going on. We had last month the U.S. Commerce Department blocked American firms from selling parts or providing services to ZTE, which makes smartphones and other telecommunications equipment, reports CNN on Money. The ban was put in place after Washington said that ZTE violated a deal in which the Chinese company agreed to pay a $1.2 billion fine for evading U.S. sanctions on Iran and North Korea. So is this going to be the pattern that we're going to see coming up with European companies as they're doing business with Iran or North Korea, whatever? If they violate those sanctions, the U.S. applies massive fines, like in this case to this Chinese company of $1.2 billion. And ZTE, that said, has about 75,000 employees worldwide. They disputed the decision. They're appealing it. The company, however, upped the stakes last week by saying that it had halted most of its operations because of the ban by the U.S. government, because of the fine by the U.S. government on these sanctions. Now, Trump has pulled back as of yesterday. He tweets out, he said, there's too many Chinese jobs at risk here. The Commerce Department has been instructed to get ZTE back into business. And so I think where this all gets very interesting is when we look at the different ways moving forward. We understand this was an illegal, unconstitutional deal. Two-thirds of America disagreed with this when Obama and Kerry did it over the objections of nearly two-thirds of the Senate. Only one vote short of them shutting down his ability to do this. They gave them the money. That ship has sailed, folks. That money was then used to buy politicians or to pay them off after the fact. It was used to set up contracts with a lot of different companies in Europe and China and so forth. Now, if we impose sanctions, are we going to get into a situation like we see with ZTE? Is that going to be the policy of the U.S. government? Because the policy, quite frankly, right now is regime change in Iran. We saw the leaked document come out last week, and this is what the document said. So the regime change plan seeks to fundamentally shift U.S. policy towards Iran and has found a receptive audience in the Trump administration, which has been moving in this direction since Bolton, a longtime and vocal supporter of regime change, entered the White House. It de-emphasizes U.S. military intervention, instead focusing on a series of moves to embolden an Iranian population that has increasingly grown angry at the ruling regime for its heavy investments in military adventurism across the regime. Across the region, sorry about that. And the question then becomes, is there really a difference between regime change in Syria and regime change in Iran? You need to understand that although the American electorate and the different political parties are different on this, the military-industrial complex and Pentagon are not. They understand that they are one and the same thing. There's an article on Zero Hedge by Caitlin Johnston that says why regime change in one means regime change in both. And she said people who are more aligned with the Democrats are typically opposed to the idea of regime change in Iran, but they support it in Syria. When you look at the Republican Party, most people oppose regime change in Syria, but they want it in Iran. So where did this come from? We've had a situation where President Trump has capitalized on the deep state opposition to his presidency to politicize this. And that's what's going on with the people who should understand and should know better that regime change isn't going to work any better in Iran than it's going to work in Syria, folks. It's simply going to make the whole area a lot more dangerous. We've had Iran regime change before. We did it in the 1950s. I think it was 1953. We overthrew their elected president, and we put in a dictator in his place, a Shah of Iran. Talked about this before. That's where this all started. It didn't start when the Ayatollah Khomeini and the revolutionary students took over the U.S. embassy. That was a response to something that happened a couple of decades earlier. And when we continue to go down this road, just like we've seen in Afghanistan, in Iraq, which just elected a majority government that is sympathetic and allied with the Iranian Shias. And just as we've seen the Lebanese government elect a majority party that is sympathetic to the Iranian Shias, we are losing that battle. And we are creating more enemies. What are the Chinese doing meanwhile? I mean, we see all this news about ZTE and the fact that we had a Chinese company that got caught up in this. They were going to shut down. Now President Trump said, we'll work with you. We'll make sure that our sanctions don't shut down this company. So are they really going to back the sanctions? Do they really have any leverage if they're going to make an exception for the Chinese company? But even beyond that, how is China playing this? I think China is playing this a lot smarter than the United States is. They're playing it smart. They're not playing it belligerent. The Chinese are trying to make China great. Our policy is to make America poor. That's what being the world's policeman, economic or military, is about. That's what this American empire is about. This is not what we voted for President Trump to do. Not at all. And we're not only making America poor, we're making enemies everywhere. What is China doing, on the other hand? This is an article from Sputnik. The 10 o'clock train to Tehran. China launches a new rail link with Iran as the U.S. is severing ties. See, we're getting belligerent with everybody. We're getting belligerent even with the Europeans, saying, you do what we say, or we're going to start enacting sanctions against your companies. Whereas the Chinese are building railroads to ship their products directly to Iran and other places in the Middle East. In this particular one, This train line that they're talking about goes from a city in China's Inner Mongolia region, an area that produces a massive amount of sunflower seeds, which the Iranians like to consume. And so what they're going to do is they're going to get it, the sunflower seed shipments that are coming out of this one little area, they're going to be able to get it there 2 weeks instead of the month that it now currently takes to ship it by boat. And so they are creating infrastructure. They're creating relationships. And it's not just in this particular, this one railroad. They're doing this everywhere. This is something they've been working on since 2013. It's called the One Belt, One Road Initiative with China. And it is a win-win for them and for the Gulf countries. It's a multi-trillion dollar initiative to set up multiple rail lines. They've been working on this for 5 years, and they're starting to get this through, and they're setting out, they're building infrastructure into East Asia, Europe, and East Africa. They're building relationships. They're building influence. They're creating wealth for themselves. What are we doing? Instead of building infrastructure, instead of building relationships, we are bombing their infrastructure while our infrastructure here in the United States is decaying. And we're creating enemies as we make ourselves more and more poor and as we undermine our own security. Are these people focused on trying to do terrorist attacks in China? No. No, because everywhere we go, we create enemies. No matter what we do, every time we get involved in regime change, we're creating more enemies. And that's precisely what we're doing. The Chinese, on the other hand, said, we think China always will look for new markets for their services. They're manufacturing goods. Every day they're increasing their production. And we can be the market for these goods. When I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, these guys really are communists. They have a five-year plan. They've got a dictator who is creating this cult of worship for himself like Mao. But they're actually, in one way, they're acting more like capitalists than we are. We are acting like the conquering dictators when it comes to our military and foreign policy. They're out there trying to create new markets, to sell their services, to sell their goods, to create relationships with people, not to make enemies out of everybody. They're getting richer. We're getting poorer. We're creating terrorists who want to destroy this country. They're creating relationships. It's absolutely insane when you look at this. We have no infrastructure. We can't build our infrastructure. We can't make America great because we're too busy doing the third Bush administration, which is really what's happening going forward in the Iran deal. I don't want to finish up a little bit more on the upcoming European Union sanctions. And before we get to your calls, and we'll take your calls if you want to join the program, the number is 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. Or if you're local here in Texas, we have a local number that is 512-646-4426. I'll be taking calls in the next hour. I want to finish up with Iran and talk a little bit about what's going on in North Korea. And before we do, I want to tell you about the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because that's what funds this program. We've got three specials that are 50% off. Big savings on DNA Force Plus. Now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And we also have all of our dental products, the Super Blue fluoride-free products. They are all 50% off. That's a couple of different flavors of toothpaste as well as the mouthwash and immune gargle. They all have nano silver in them, and they all don't have fluoride. They have the good halogen, iodine, but they do not have fluoride in it. The nano silver is very effective at killing bacteria as well as viruses. Bacteria can cause gum disease. It leads to tooth loss as well as to heart disease. Take a chance. If you haven't tried these, 50% off is a good time to try these. We know that if you try it, you're going to become a regular customer. That's why we drop this so much. But of course, if you've also tried it in the past, now's a good time to stock up. All of our dental Super Blue fluoride-free products with nano silver are 50% off. And finally, Bodies is also 50% off. It's our intense turmeric formula. It's a great way to help support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. And you can get that right now, Bodies, at 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, I want to play a clip for you, President Trump, and he was coming after making fun of Barack Obama for the billions of dollars that he gave away to Iran. Here's President Trump at a rally last week. Let's play that clip nine.
Obama, President Obama. Paid $1.8 billion for hostages. You, not me, you, last night you saw it, and again, it's leading to some very big things, and I think that Kim Jong-un did a great service to himself, to his country by doing this, but those hostages came out with respect. We didn't pay for them. We're going to set the table. We're going to make a great deal for the world, for North Korea, for South Korea, for Japan, for China.
All right, we certainly do hope that that is going to be the case, that it is not just going to be more of a delay by the North Koreans, because we've seen this happen with Kim's father, with his grandfather, striking deals with Reagan, with Bush, with Clinton, with Bush the Second. And then ignoring those deals, buying time with those deals. So hopefully they aren't going to be taken with those deals. And when we look at the amount of money, as I said before, yes, it was a bad deal to give them $1.8 billion. And it was a bad deal for Obama and Kerry to sign that agreement. However, that ship is gone. And the question is, are we going to play this smart? Are we going to fall into the same trap that we've seen the neocons and military-industrial complex do for a very long time? Not building our infrastructure, not building relationships, not building markets where we can sell goods and services, but building enemies. China is playing it smart. China is building not only their infrastructure, but they have enough money because they don't have unpaid mercenary force that we do, this American empire. They actually have enough money to build an infrastructure so they can transport their goods and services back and forth to the Middle East and to Africa, where there are a lot of natural resources there. They are playing a long-term strategic game. They are acting more like capitalists in terms of trying to set up voluntary relationships. We are acting, and when it comes to the military stuff, as I said, we're acting more like communist dictators when it comes to the policies that we're pursuing abroad. And we're creating conflict with Europe over whether or not we're going to have sanctions against their companies. And this is why President Trump is now walking back these sanctions against ZTE, about to put that company out of business. Why? Because of sanctions against Iran and North Korea. But what is happening in North Korea? North Korea, over the weekend, said they're going to invite international media to watch the shutdown of the nuclear test site. Well, I think that's another ship that has already sailed. I think it was shut down when they blew up the 100-kiloton bomb and had subsequent to that earthquakes and massive collapses that buried 200 people. And then as they're trying to get those people out, they had some additional collapses that buried another 100 people. We had multiple investigations using different research tactics within China saying, yeah, we're looking to see if they've got any radiation coming out of that site or if they can still use it. And now we've had an international group just last week say we've looked at satellite pictures and it looks like it is still collapsing. Nevertheless, and this is what gives me cause for concern with the North Koreans, they're now saying we're going to have a celebration where we're going to invite journalists to come May 23rd and the 25th. Maybe that'll give them some time to do a partial excavation of the site so they can then bury it again in terms of a show. I mean, when they talk about getting rid of the weapons, I mean, this is going to look more like a groundbreaking ceremony where the leaders show up with a couple of shovels. Because this place is buried, folks. Disarmament of the nuclear test ground, they said, will be done in the following sequence. Making all tunnels of the test ground collapse by explosion. Check. That's already been done about 6 months ago. Completely blocking entries. Check. That's already been done, unless they've excavated those. Now they can bury them again. Removing all observation facilities, research institutes, and structures of guard units on the ground. So that's what they're planning on doing. Now, if you want to go witness that, if you are from China, Russia, the United States, UK, or South Korea, and you're a journalist, you can apply to them. And then they will have full control of transportation and lodging. They will decide where you go, what you see, who you talk to. And if you think that you're going to be a journalist under those conditions, then you can apply to them to go to North Korea. They already have these kinds of controls of tourists. As a matter of fact, we saw they killed one tourist who, as a souvenir, took one of their propaganda posters because he didn't do what they said to do. And they've got personal guides for all these people the entire time you're in the country. They make sure that you don't talk to anybody that they don't want you to talk to. So we'll see what's going to be happening with this. As I pointed out, the people in this international study who published their results last week said that the site at that mountain is still sinking. So hurry up. We got to have this ceremony before the thing completely goes underground. That's where this is really going to go. And finally, as we're going to pick up with your phone calls in the next segment, I want to talk about what happened over the weekend. I mentioned the fact that we had retired General, Lieutenant General McHenry, talk about John McCain, called him Songbird John, and said he was evidence that torture works. And I said, well, no, actually, he's evidence that torture doesn't work, that you could get anybody to say anything, which is why we have 109 ex-generals and admirals sign a paper saying that they don't want Gina Haspel in because they don't want to see that come back. You know, they were able to get John McCain to say anything that they wanted to. That's why he's calling him Songbird McCain, because they tortured him. But does this general really believe that the propaganda that John McCain said was true? Or does he think that John McCain was just telling them whatever they wanted to hear because they were torturing him? Number one. Number two, we've had Fox ban this general, McHenry. Now, I completely disagree with McHenry, but you're going to ban him for this? What you're telling people is that it is worse to criticize John McCain. Fox News is saying it's worse to criticize John McCain than it is to violate moral standards, to violate the law, and to torture people. And if you think that that is okay, because I've seen a lot of people say, hey, it worked, or hey, it was legal when she did it. No, it wasn't legal. It wasn't moral when she did it. It was illegal, it was immoral, and we executed people for doing the same thing in World War II when we had an American government that actually had a moral compass that we've now lost, long-term have lost. And I have to say that if this is all effective, then why is Gina Haspel saying she'll never do it again? If it was legal, if it was moral, if it was effective, then why isn't she doing it? I mean, that's a pretty cowardly position to take. But again, you have to understand that regardless of what you think about the initial round of this, she doubled down on this because everybody agreed by 2005 that it was immoral, that it was illegal, that it was ineffective, thanks to the work of John Kiriakou, who I talked to last week, who was a whistleblower. He went to jail for exposing that. He got some changes in that. And then after that, and everybody said it's not moral, it's not effective, it's not legal, then Gina Haspel deleted the evidence that would have incriminated people. She obstructed justice after the fact, compounding the fact that what she did was criminal, immoral, and ineffective. And she is not suitable for being there. And hopefully Rand Paul is going to stick to his guns. And he is not only going to not vote for her, but he's going to filibuster.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to take some phone calls if you want to join in the program and offer your take on what's happening with Iran, what is happening with North Korea, what is happening with the opening of the embassy in Jerusalem, or what's happening domestically. We'll be taking your calls, 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244 is the toll-free number if you want to join the program. Let's go to Jefferson in Virginia. Is this Thomas? Hey, Jefferson, Thomas, you there?
David.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
It's a pleasure listening to you. You spell things out very clearly, but we spend an awful lot of time talking about what's going wrong instead of talking about what the solutions should be.
Okay, what's your solution?
Well, I mean, it depends on the problem. I mean, we live in a tax plantation. We're all slaves to the tax system. That's one of our problems.
You know, that's right.
Since 1913, we've been taken over. But that's the starting point where it's very clear that we've been operating outside of the Constitution. So almost everything that's happened since then is illegitimately derived.
Yes.
So we sort of gave up on our own constitution since then. So we really hamper ourselves when we try to oppose people who don't believe in the Constitution while we do. We handcuff ourselves.
I agree. I think that the answer is not going to really be found in Washington. I mean, I look at what's happening, for example, in both medical marijuana and in protecting our schools. In both of those cases, you've got people at the local county level saying, we don't care what the Gun-Free School Zone Act of the establishment Republicans and establishment Democrats. You had Biden and you had George H.W. Bush push that Gun-Free School Zone Act. And then you had people in local jurisdictions say, no, we're going to vet and train teachers to protect the schools. And they did it in defiance of Washington because they called their bluff. And the same thing's happening with medical marijuana. You've got 60% of the states saying either with their legislatures or with referenda that they believe that medical marijuana is something people ought to be able to do. Regardless of whether you agree with that policy, it is the policy of the Constitution. Under the 10th Amendment, the federal government doesn't have the powers to shut that down. And I think that's one of the reasons you haven't seen Washington, even though Sessions is very eager on that particular issue to exert his particular policy position. He hasn't done it because he doesn't really have the congressional authority. We saw the same thing with the churches on Pulpit Freedom Sunday. Tell the IRS, you don't have any right to tell us what we can say from the pulpit. Here's a tape recording of our sermon where we endorsed a particular candidate, and we defy you to do something about that. So I think the answer really is in taking back, when we're talking about our liberties, I think the answer is in taking that back at the local level.
We got to start somewhere. When it comes to Jeff Sessions and John Kerry, what's the hesitation to enforce the Logan Act there? Just because you haven't done it before doesn't make any sense. Somebody has to actually violate the law clearly before you use it. So that doesn't make any sense.
And it is, Jefferson, that is the clearest violation of the Logan Act that we've had since the Logan Act was created. And it was created after George Logan did what he did. It was created in response to what he did. So he couldn't be tried under the Logan Act. But what John Kerry is doing is exactly what the Logan Act was set up to prohibit.
Right. That's why it's there. So there shouldn't be any hesitation. It's ridiculous.
Do you think, let me ask you this. I mean, I'm kind of suspicious since Iran threw this thing out there and said, if this doesn't go through to our liking, we're going to expose the politicians that we paid off to get this thing through. Do you think that's why John Kerry is lobbying so heavily to try to keep this thing going?
Could very easily be part of the reason.
Yeah. I have my suspicions. I can't prove it, but I certainly have my suspicions. It actually is amazing to see how hard the Obama administration is working to try to keep in effect a law that was simply an executive order by Barack Obama, and it clearly is within President Trump's ability to overturn that. It's absolutely amazing. All right, thank you for joining us, Jefferson. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of your calls. That number is 888-201-2244.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're taking your phone calls this hour. If you want to join the program, the number is 888-201-2244. That toll-free number again is 888-201-2244. And I want to go to Jessica in Detroit. Thank you for calling, Jessica. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Jessica.
Hi, David. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've talked to
thank you for calling.
And Roger, and now you, so I can die now.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said I spoke to Roger and Alex and now you, so I can die happily now.
Okay, great. Great. What did you want to talk about?
I wanted to touch on two things. Medical marijuana and the caveman. I've been on the caveman for about a year now. I got to talk to Alex on the May Day broadcast, and I had been on it for a few weeks. But let me tell you something. The iodine and the caveman together, I have a toddler. I don't know if you can hear in the background there, but I hear people all the time say, I wish I could have just a tenth of the energy she has. Well, you guys gave me at least a third of the energy she has with that stuff.
It's well, that's incredible. Good to hear.
It's amazing. And also, not to be a little gross, but around my cycle time, I don't have the PMS and all that. So that's really something that I didn't expect out of that caveman. But that's definitely a benefit that I've had. But I also
well, that's great to hear.
I have Crohn's disease, and the medical marijuana has put my... I have a medical marijuana card here in Michigan, and we are 2018 here. We're up to vote to legalize. But it has put my Crohn's in remission. And
now, I've heard that about so many different conditions that people have had.
Yes,
and, of course, they always say, well, it's just anecdotal because they won't do any studies because they don't
Absolutely.
Own it. You know, now that you've got Gary Johnson and all these different politicians, you've got John Boehner now, who said he was unalterably opposed to medical marijuana. Now he's investing in it. So now that some of these people have invested in it, I think you're going to see a lot of studies being funded by these people so they can show what we've known all along, that there's a lot of conditions that it's very effective for. Yeah.
Jeff Sessions saying it's creating just as much violence and illegal activity as heroin. I mean, that's just, how can you even say that? It's not even on the same level. And I'm glad they're, you know, trying to reschedule it and all that. But I really don't understand what Sessions' mission is, because there's people like me that have to worry, you know, that have children. I have to worry, you know, on the federal level, this is not legal. And, you know,
there's a lot of things I don't understand about what Jeff Sessions is doing. First of all, as far as the drug war goes, we know, because we've had this thing now for 47 years, we know that it's not effective. But the question is it constitutional? Because as Attorney General, he ought to be concerned about that. The 10th Amendment and the 18th Amendment, which they passed to prohibit alcohol, tell you that they don't have any power, legitimate power, to prohibit anything. Certainly if it's got a medical use.
The prohibition of alcohol was so people in power could make more money, and I believe
that's right.
Same thing here, prohibition of marijuana. People are trying to line their pockets, and I really hope the president's listening today, because you need to get rid of Sessions, Trump.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I agree. And that's the key thing, is that at least, you know, back when they did that in the 20s, they had enough respect for the Constitution that they passed a constitutional amendment to give themselves the power, because they didn't have the power because of the 10th Amendment. So the 10th and the 18th Amendments show that they don't have any legal power for that. But, you know, the other thing that I can't believe about Jeff Sessions is the fact that he is arguing these things, like whether or not the president has authority to control the borders, whether or not the president has authority to get rid of a prior executive order from Obama, which is what DACA is. President Trump has already done that twice with the Paris Climate Accord, with the Iran deal. He certainly could do it with DACA. And so I don't understand why they're even arguing this, why they're letting federal judges at the district level block the president. That is a very dangerous precedent to accept, and I think that really needs to be stopped. That bothers me as much as what Sessions is saying about medical marijuana, because they're letting that go through.
He's trying to fill in for McCain. I honestly think he's trying to be McCain's predecessor.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing, but it makes no sense. Makes no sense. Well, I certainly am glad to hear that Caveman is working very well for you, fantastically for you, and that's the key thing. You know, when we talk about even, you know, your use of medical marijuana, there's so many things that are out there that provide nutrients that our body needs. And it's a very different approach to say, as people did in ancient times, let your medicine be your food. Many times the conditions that we have are because we have deficiencies in certain things that are there if we had the natural remedies. But it doesn't happen because we got these things like the big pharmaceutical products. And before I go to the next call, since you brought this up, I just want to talk about what has come out about the opioid epidemic. We've seen Purdue Pharmaceuticals and other companies. We've had people who have been flipped because they were basically writing tons of opioid prescriptions. We had a rep saying that when the doctors would complain and say, I think my patient is getting addicted to this, he'd say, oh, no, it's just a pseudo-addiction. What you need to do is prescribe more of this stuff. I mean, that's how insane this was. But we've now got, according to the Free Thought Project, the DEA knowingly gave addicts and drug dealers licenses to prescribe opioids. An independent investigation into the DEA's conduct has found that it's been issuing controlled substance licenses to drug dealers, to drug addicts, to convicted felons and dead people, It's just one of the many things that have fueled the current crisis. This was originally an investigation done by the Daily Caller. They said in 2006, there were only 510,000 individuals and organizations that had controlled substance licenses. In other words, could write these prescriptions. As of March 2018, so over a 12-year period, it increased from 500,000 to 1.7 million people. And listen to some of the people that got licenses. They had a dentist who admitted to helping an outlaw motorcycle gang manufacture meth in the early 2000s. He got a 2-year jail sentence. And let me just interject here. That's a lot less than some people would get for having marijuana. This is a guy who is trafficking and helping to manufacture meth, and he gets a 2-year sentence. A lot of people will get a mandatory minimum of a decade or more for possessing marijuana for their own use, depending on the quantity of it. Anyway, he had previously been caught with meth several times as dentist. He admitted to a history of substance abuse with alcohol, marijuana, meth, and cocaine. And then he was given a license in 2012 to prescribe opioids and other controlled substances. Another doctor was also given a license in 2009, even though he'd previously had a run-in with the DEA caught distributing cocaine in 1981. So he's caught distributing cocaine in 1981. He wasn't prosecuted because he cooperated. He got a plea bargain deal with these guys. Then he was arrested again 20 years later in 2001 with cocaine and two prescription drugs. And so then 8 years later, they say, all right, now we're going to let you prescribe controlled substances. It's absolutely amazing. You want to know where the opioid epidemic comes from? Look in Washington. Look in Washington. Look at the people who are owned by these big pharmaceutical companies. Finally, this last thing here. The DEA took in $328 million in licensing fees in 2013. See, that explains it right there. You want to know why they're doing this stuff? They had 42,000 people in their database listed an employer ID rather than a Social Security number, which means that they couldn't do a background check on most of these people. But they're getting over $300 million and license fees. So let's just increase it from a half million people who can do these prescriptions to 1.7 million. And you wonder where the opioid epidemic comes from. Gee, I wonder. All right, let's go to John in North Carolina. Go ahead, John. Thank you for holding.
Hey, boss. How you doing?
Doing good.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I live here in North Carolina now for 26 years. I'm a registered Republican, and I wanted to know what you call a libertarian. I'm sorry for being stupid, but...
Well, you know, that's interesting because we see these labels change. We had classical liberals. It used to be liberals or people who supported economic freedom and personal freedom. And then that split in the early part of the 20th century around World War One. You had people who wanted to get into World War One that supported mainly the business interests. That's where we started to see the military-industrial complex. And then Woodrow Wilson and J. Edgar Hoover and Palmer, who was the attorney general, they did some really rough treatment of people who were opposed to their war, and that caused the people who supported economic liberty and personal liberty to split. We'll talk about that and finish up when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're taking your phone calls. If you want to join the program, that toll-free number is 888-201-2244. Again, it's 888-201-2244. So we went to break. We're talking to John in North Carolina. John, you still there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Okay, good. You'd asked me what a libertarian is. And, you know, one of the things I want to say first is, we have to understand that the liberals are very effective at using labels. They always seize the rhetorical high ground by the way they label things. And so just keep in mind that labels are going to be kind of approximate with this and a little bit tricky. And that labels can also be used as a tool to control us, to say, well, I'm part of this group and I'm not part of that group. And anybody that calls himself that, I totally disagree with them. So what I want to keep this at, I would say strictly that a libertarian would be somebody who supports individual liberty, somebody who believes that government's first priority is to protect individual liberty. And I would say that is the tradition of America. That's what our founding fathers talked about. And that's why I said it was kind of that way. We have a lot of people say, well, I don't call myself a libertarian because I don't want to be associated with the Libertarian Party, especially since we had this last election, we had Gary Johnson and William Weld, who really kind of sounded like an adjunct to the Democrat Party. Quite frankly, they put individual liberty, I think, on the back burner for a lot of issues. A lot of people would say, well, I identify as a classical liberal, because prior to the beginning of the 20th century, a liberal was somebody who supported liberty. But that all changed when we had Woodrow Wilson maneuvering us into World War I. You had a fracture there of people who had in the past supported economic liberty. They, for the most part, a lot of the big business interests said that they were pro-foreign war. And then you had a lot of people who said, we don't want the war. And they pushed back against that, and they actually allied themselves with socialists and anarchists and Marxists and so forth to, actually not Marxists at the time, I guess, but with the socialists and anarchists. And that's when J. Edgar Hoover came in with the Palmer raids and so forth coming after people. So it hardened things, and you wound up with people who said, well, we agree with civil liberty and we're anti-war, but we don't like capitalism because those capitalists got us into a war. And that's really where you kind of get this weird mixture that we've got here in the United States, in my opinion. You also had the conservatives, self-identifying conservatives, so people like the GOP branch, people like Taft or people like Goldwater, who were non-interventionist abroad. And they supported a lot of freedoms here at home. But then on the other hand, you know, what we talk about neoconservatives, we say, well, these are conservatives who support foreign war, the American empire, which was never what America was about. So that's why we make the distinction between the labels of neocon and conservative. And those people have, in many cases, also come out in opposition to individual liberty for things like medical marijuana, for example. Or even supporting other types of things like, you know, taking away your ability to have due process by supporting civil asset forfeiture where they can take your property without giving you due process. So we still have that kind of division. Some people saying they support civil liberty. But of course, now we see that the people on the left, they're out there saying, well, we need to take away free speech and so forth. So now that's not even clear. It's always changing. That's why the labels are not really accurate. But I say that libertarian is, and that's why I call myself libertarian, because I don't want to necessarily associate with a political party. I'm for liberty. And I want liberty in all things. And I want to put America first. I don't want us to have foreign entanglement and foreign wars, because I think that's putting America last. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I still vote Republican, but I just didn't know, you know?
Well, you know, there's some Republicans who are libertarian in their policies. And you really kind of have to take the policies and the people one at a time. You know, when we go to a label, to go with a party label and to just be blindly, you know, in with one party or the other, then that really doesn't serve you very well either. It's just gotten to the point where the Democrats, for the most part, as far as I can tell, they don't really support any liberty at all, except for the liberty to kill your child. I mean, they don't want to tell you, they don't want you to have the choice as to whether or not you, how you vaccinate your child or whether you vaccinate your child. They don't want you to even pick the schedule. If you want to, they're going to tell you not only which vaccines you have to take, but they're going to force you to take them in a cluster and so forth. So they don't want you to make choices about your child's education or about their medical care. They don't want you to make choices about most of the things in your life except for an abortion. That's why when I look at the Democrats, I can't really find really anything that I can agree with them, just very rarely. So I usually wind up voting for the lesser of evils. But sometimes we have good candidates. I would say they're in North Carolina. You got Walter Jones. He just survived a primary challenge. He is a guy who does value liberty, who does place America first. So we do have some really good people in the Republican Party that are not just the lesser of two evils. So I don't know if you're there in his jurisdiction or not. But thank you, John. Appreciate that. Let's go to Jared in New York. Go ahead, Jared. Thank you for holding.
Hey.
Hey. What's up?
Yeah, I don't know. It's my first time calling.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I guess the embassy in Jerusalem, I was watching that. So,
what'd you think about that?
I don't know. It's like, why are we, why are we, like, still, like, going around and, you know, like, is it, like even, like, a good thing or a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've looked at this, and I think a lot of Americans looked at it and said, well, if we're going to recognize Israel as a state, why wouldn't we recognize their embassy where they say their capital is? And so that's one aspect of it. But it gets into the big thing with the Palestinians and the fact that you know, they're saying, well, this is an international city and it's supposed to be divided. You got a lot of people in Israel who are not happy about it. I think I agree with President Trump in terms of letting the Israeli government pick where their capital is going to be. That doesn't mean that they're taking over Jerusalem as a unified entity. We've got some people who are pushing for the second temple. They've actually, I don't know, you probably saw this on the Drudge Report, they actually minted a coin comparing President Trump to King Cyrus of Persia, going back to the Bible, where Cyrus sent them back to reclaim the land out of captivity and began the building of the temple and so forth. And they see this as a first step in rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. And so they're very excited about that. And on the other hand, you've got the Palestinians, obviously, who aren't. This is the 70th anniversary of the State of Israel. Palestinians, going back, I think, to 1998, they came up with a day that they celebrate the same day that the Israelis celebrate the State of Israel. The Palestinians have a day of mourning because of that, that they began that celebration in 1998. So you've always got this conflict going back and forth. It's always there to one level or the other. But this time, President Trump has said he's going to move the embassy there. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens. It hasn't been the tinder box that everybody predicted that it would be when they started this about 6 months or so ago. They have had some riots there today, and I think there's been, at this point, 16 people killed in these riots, getting very violent. One thing perhaps President Trump could learn from watching this is that you've got to have the will to protect your borders or your nation isn't going to exist. We don't seem to have that will here in America, unfortunately, and I'm not saying we need to take the same tactics that the Israelis have done. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. If you'd like to join the program, the number, toll-free number, is 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. We're going to go back to the callers here in just 1 second. Before we do, real quickly, yesterday we had another Tesla accident. This one was reported. They're not sure yet, but they think that it was a Tesla Model S that was on autopilot. Whether it was on autopilot or not, it slammed into a fire truck that was stopped at a stoplight. It hit that fire truck, stopped at the stoplight. It hit it at 60 miles per hour. Witnesses said there was no braking done by the Tesla. The police department said there was no indication that the Tesla driver was under the influence of any substance. Information on what the driver may have told the investigators about the circumstances of the crash would not be available until sometime today. So that's kind of interesting as we see the teenagers who were incinerated last week. There were three teenagers in a car. It doesn't appear that autopilot was involved in that. However, electric batteries were involved in that. It's a very different type of power source. It also has its problems, just like the internal combustion engines that our government is so anxious to outlaw and to ban. It's one of the reasons why they have created the subsidy entrepreneur, the subsidy billionaire Elon Musk and others like him, because just like they want to shut down coal power plants and oil production, they want to shut down any internal combustion engine machines. Nevertheless, you have the own special issues with electric vehicles. And I think it was also interesting that the same day this happened with the Tesla Model S, which was yesterday, we also had the article come out in the Wall Street Journal saying something I've been saying for a very long time. And the headline is, in self-driving car road tests, we are the guinea pigs. Yes, we are the guinea pigs. You are part of a big experiment being conducted in and around you without your informed consent, without your knowledge, without your permission, because these cars are on the road with you, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with this or not. And I find it absolutely amazing that our government that has done so much to make cars so expensive and unaffordable in terms of all the mandated safety stuff that they put on, trying to make them safe to the nth degree, will just completely ignore any concern or risk about the experiments that are going on right now on our highways. Not only with Tesla, but also with Uber, with Waymo, which is Alphabet or Google's organization. And I think that's all boils down to the fact that we see on the Hill this article, mass transit is collapsing everywhere. So the government wants to control your transportation. Mass transit doesn't work. They think they can do it if they partner with some corporations like Tesla or like Waymo, you know, Google. If they partner with these organizations or with Ford or whatever, if they give them kind of a monopoly and let them rent this to you by the mile, then they can tax you by the mile. They can track your every movement. They can have control, even if it's a little bit more indirect control. They can have control over your movements. They can have knowledge of your whereabouts. And so the government that has been so desperate to create mass transit so they can control us and control our movement now is working with corporations to do this. And you have to understand where this all fits. The real story behind all this, again, folks, is Agenda 21, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainability from the UN, and it's all being implemented with self-driving cars, smart cities, 5G, all of that is set up as a means to control you, to control your movement. If they control your movement, if they control your ability to communicate, if they control your ability to shoot, you're done. You're done. Those are the three things that were always the objectives of controlling a population. Control the ability to move, communicate, and shoot. And we have a First and Second Amendment for two of those, but we don't have anything to protect our freedom of movement. All right, let's go back to our callers. We've got Clayton in Indiana. Thank you for holding, Clayton. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I'm very happy to speak with you, David Knight. You're the man.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I really wanted to touch on a way to combat the problem with the corporations getting into our lives and controlling our lives and selling our data. It's a big time for our data to be harvested and sold to third parties and whatnot.
Yes.
You know, I think boycotting is effective in a way, but I think we really need to reestablish what our principles are. And in doing so, maybe we can create a contract for the consumer to actually have whatever corporation or business or service to actually agree upon too. It's so one-sided right now.
I agree. And it's one-sided because there's so few of them. They've really kind of created an oligarchy. And you can go back and you can look at their pedigree and you can look at how they got started and you can see that it was, you know, a few research and development companies like Incutel that does venture capital and so forth, affiliated with DARPA, the CIA. You know, Incutel is a CIA's company. But there were all these people that are, you know, DARPA scientists high up, and they're sitting on the boards of these venture capital firms, and they're funneling money to these individuals who, when you look at, I'll tell you, when you look at Mark Zuckerberg at those committee hearings that he testified before, you look at this and you say, I don't know, this guy doesn't look like a genius to me. Maybe he was just the lucky idiot who got chosen as a figurehead for this massive spy regime called Facebook.
Yeah, and, you know, he's the figurehead of a structure. And the structure itself is meant to, you know, have us sign our names on a piece of paper that has all sorts of things that a lot of people don't look into.
That's right.
And I think to bring it back to, you know, ownership of our liberties and our freedoms and what we should have ownership over, you know, we should produce or offer a service to produce a consumer contract that no matter what we're signing into, if we're ever signing a piece of paper, well, they also need to be signing our piece of paper.
I agree. I think the biggest problem is that we have in America people who don't really care about their privacy. They don't really care about their liberty. They will give up anything if you just promise them security and safety. And you don't even have to prove that it's going to be safe or secure for them. You just have to say, well, you know, this ought to make you safer and more secure. And there's also another element here too, I think, Clayton. And I've always been suspicious when we go back and we look at, you know, the fact that we have a generation of kids who are constantly wanting to share everything about their life. I think it goes back to Big Brother, the Big Brother programs, where you take just ordinary people and you put them in a fishbowl and you watch everything that they do. And it was a Big Brother scenario. And it was like, well, you know, great. You know, then right after that, they happen to roll out Facebook and these other social media things after they've primed people for that. And the kids would look at that and say, hey, I might be able to become a celebrity if I share enough of my life and get people to approve it and like what I do. Let me just put everything out there. So you've got these types of, you know, there's a sickness in our society of wanting to be a celebrity, this kind of narcissism, but also no value whatsoever for individual liberty or privacy or the Bill of Rights. We just don't have that there. I think we're going to have to cultivate that in the population before they're going to demand any solutions.
We're in a time frame with the whole Facebook and their data being exposed as far as helping Trump. You know, that's the only time it was exposed.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
that's right.
And it's ideal time to really put into place, hey, if you want to take some measures to protect yourself and create maybe a movement of sorts to where, you know, hey, if there's some sort of an attorney out there that is willing to, you know, advocate for all regular consumers and draw up a contract that they can provide, then, you know, that would be a form of boycotting, not necessarily, but it would actually level the playing field.
Well, I agree. I mean, you're going to have, though, I think, some separate structures to come up in competition to them that are going to offer that to people, because I don't think people will be proactive. I just don't think that they value their privacy or their freedom enough. I just see it all the time. I mean, I see it with this situation with Gina Haspel. I've seen it with the Ed Snowden stuff. I thought, wow, you know, look at this. We've been telling people this is going on for quite some time. It's been going on since the Church Committee hearings in the 1970s, and that was 10 years after they knew that it was happening in the 1960s that the CIA and the NSA were spying on people. But I thought, well, maybe, you know, that we get the information leaked by Snowden and they can actually see the documents and they can see the NSA mocking people for having smartphones, saying that that is Big Brother and so forth. Maybe people will wake up. Nah, they don't care. They're still just, it's like, whatever. Hey, did you see that meme that I put out there? That's the sad reality of where we are. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're even talking to our callers, Michael, Craig, Marcus. Hang on a second. We'll get right to you. I got to say, you know, when we talk about a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich, here's an example of it. Broke over the weekend. Mueller indicted a Russian company that didn't even exist. And so you got the situation where you got a lawyer standing before the U.S. magistrate, Judge Michael Harvey. And he asked one of the lawyers representing the accused Russian company Concord Management and Consulting if he was representing a third company that was listed in the Mueller indictment. He said, what about Concord Catering? And he said, the government makes an allegation there's some association. I don't mean for you to, do you represent them or not today? And are we arraigning them as well? And the lawyer responded and said, we're not. And the reason for that, Your Honor, is I think we're dealing with a situation of the government having indicted the proverbial ham sandwich. That company did not exist as a legal entity during the time period alleged by the government. In other words, alleged by Mueller. This is how crazy the Mueller investigation has gotten. All right, real quickly, I want to tell you about the specials we have at InfoWarsStore.com, and then we'll move to our callers. We have several products that are 50% off. Big savings on DNA Force Plus, 50% off. That is a very expensive product to produce. You can take a look at the clinical studies for the key ingredient there, BioPQQ, which makes it so expensive. You can see there's been clinical studies done on this to show how effective it is. And 50% off is a big savings on DNA Force Plus. We also have our entire line of dental products, our Super Blue fluoride-free products. They have iodine, the good halogen, not fluoride, and they have nano silver to fight bacteria as well as virus. And we have a couple flavors of toothpaste. We have a mouthwash. We have an immune gargle spray. And all of those products are 50% off. And finally, we have BodEase, 50% off. It's an intense turmeric formula. It helps to support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. And you can get BodEase at 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. And there's many other products there. Those are just three big sales that we have, 50% off for all of those products. All right, let's go back to our callers. So our last segment here, we're going to try to get through Michael, Craig, and Marcus. Go ahead, Michael in Rhode Island. Thank you for holding.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you.
I'm a busy guy, so I'll just get right into it. I want to talk about Jerusalem, medical marijuana, and I'll touch on brain force.
Okay.
But for Jerusalem, you know, these people decided that they wanted to move the embassy there. You know, that's their state capital, so they should just leave them alone. That's their choice.
I agree.
It's none of their business. If they don't like it, too bad. You know, that's their choice. That's what they govern that country. That's them.
I agree.
And medical marijuana, basically how they take advantage of people that need it. So you have to go to your doctor. You go to your primary doctor, and he says, oh, I can't sign this paperwork. I can't give you this. I don't know what to tell you. So therefore, you have to go to a special doctor for medical marijuana, and that's going to cost you about $200, which I'm sure is taxed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you have to give it about another $50 to the state, to the Department of Health.
And which state is this that you're talking about? Which
I'm
state?
Sorry, what?
Which state are you talking about? Rhode Island?
The Democratic state, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's what they do. They make you jump through all these loops and pay all this money. But it's so easy just for them to hand out prescriptions to all these drugs that alter your mind and, you know, really hurt you.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make sense, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's the problem. It's kind of like the free trade agreements that we have that are thousands of pages long, right? You know, and that's the problem that we're seeing as they're bringing marijuana online. They're leaving all these entrapments. They're putting in massive fees and so forth. And they essentially make it so that you have to beg them for permission to get stuff to treat your body. I mean, that's just it's upside down. Everything is prohibited unless they expressly permit it.
Like, why do you need permission to take care of your body? You know, that doesn't make sense.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And, I disagree with that. Yeah, I think that your body belongs to you and you should be able to get any kind of medicine. So I think that there is no constitutional authorization for either the DEA or the FDA because they both turn the Constitution on its head.
Exactly. And, you know, basically, if you want to grow as a person, too, you want to go get a job and you have a medical marijuana card, they're going to look at that. They're going to frown upon that. And sure, they're going to say, oh, you can't discriminate against that. But they'll make something else up. And it's a very gray area.
It's a stigma.
Area.
That's right.
And I'll talk about brain force now. I know you're busy. Brain force works really well. I've used it. It does give you mental clarity and all that. And it's way better than any, like, energy drink. And it really
I agree. It's my favorite supplement that we have here. You know, most of the things that we take, they're vitamins and they're supplements. And I can see a difference in my health over a period of time. But with brain force, that's something that you feel it right away. And I would have said, you're talking about focus. I said if they would ask me after I'd taken it, I would have called it brain focus instead of brain force. But, yeah, I really do like brain force.
Yep. All right, David.
Well, I appreciate that, Michael. Thank you so much. Let's go quickly to Craig in New Mexico. You wanted to talk about background checks. Go ahead, Craig.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. If we want to hold President Trump accountable to his promise to Senator Cory Gardner recognizing states' rights on medical cannabis, we really want to put teeth to that promise, we need to urge President Trump to remove or rescind the postscript to question 11E on the National Instant Criminal Background Check form. The original question 11E stated, are you an unlawful user of marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this new postscript, which was added January 16th of 2017, states, the use or possession of marijuana remains unlawful under federal law, regardless of whether it has been legalized or decriminalized for medical or recreational purposes in the state where you reside. Well, I'm a lifetime member of Gun Owners of America and the National Rifle Association. I have multiple sclerosis, and I am a medical marijuana patient here in New Mexico, and we need to commend President Trump on this promise to the Colorado senator, but at the same time, we need to hold his feet to the fire and put real teeth to that promise by asking him, demanding that he rescind this unconstitutional postscript to question 11E on the National Instant Background Check form.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we were just talking about, the traps that they put in. And I think that would be a huge win for President Trump if he were to come out on the side. The vast majority of Americans agree with the idea that you should be able to use marijuana for medical treatment. This is not people out there doing this recreationally. And when you contrast it with opioids, where people are trying to get medical treatment, and instead this cynical pharmaceutical industry is getting them addicted to painkillers. I mean, the contrast couldn't be more clear. And this is, again, something that is, I want to remind conservatives that the war on drugs is a UN agenda from 1961. They created the four schedules. They put the drugs in there. They put marijuana in as a Schedule One drug, saying that it had no medical use. It was a lie then. Everybody knows it's a lie now. And that was just adopted by Richard Nixon, and he called it his war on drugs. No, it was a UN war on drugs. That's where this all came from. You're absolutely right. That needs to be taken out. There are tripwires that are being set up, not only with marijuana, but I think also we have to be very concerned about people on both the left and the right saying, we want to take guns away from anybody that's accused of being crazy. Look, I want to take guns away from crazy people too. But they need to have due process. We need to do the due process first, and we need to be very careful about that. And I think that that is a really dangerous area that we're getting in because we don't care anymore about doing the due process first. I have no problem with that. And quite frankly, if somebody is crazy enough that they need to have their guns taken away, they need to be locked up. Because as we see all over Europe, you don't need a gun to kill people. You can do it with a knife, you can do it with an axe, you can do it with acid or a car. And if they're violent and crazy, they need to be put away. But they do need to have due process first, just as we all do. Thank you, Craig. Let's go to Marcus in Fort Worth. Go ahead, Marcus.
How you doing, David?
Doing good. Thanks for holding.
So, y'all could have already pointed this out. You know, I do my best to watch all the News Wars with David Knight and InfoWars, I can. But I remember a mainstream article coming out, and I even think I remember seeing a report on it of David.
Of what?
Being considered a white supremacist. They called him a white supremacist in an article.
Called who? Called who a white David supremacist? David Hogg?
Yes. He was referred to in an article, not an InfoWars article, but an article that InfoWars was reporting on. They were just reporting on how they had said David Hogg might be a white supremacist. We think he's a white supremacist. Well, then what came out just recently about how he was in a program to get off people who were of minority background for crimes. And I just think that's funny that conflicts. So
yeah, I don't know. That might have been a satire because I know that we had people like James Woods because he's very authoritarian, because he's very anti-free speech, because these are students who are out there lobbying to have their liberty to defend themselves and other people's liberties to defend themselves. They're begging that their freedom to defend be taken away. And when you look at, we've had people put him in, Photoshop him into a Nazi costume and so forth. But, I don't think that he's a white supremacist. I do think he is a tool that's being used as a front for the gun control agenda. I think it is an AstroTurf movement. All right. Thanks for listening. That's our show for today.